Kia ora. Welcome to Lunch Money, the audio version of the live webinar that takes questions from our investors.
Well, kia ora, nga mihi nui ki a koutou katoa, nō mai haere mai ki a tēnei hui.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome to another week of Lunch Money brought to you by Sharesies. At Sharesies, our purpose is to create the most financially empowered generation.
For those of you who are new to Lunch Money, we do these every Thursday at lunchtime. And this is a place where you, as investors, can come and hear from people leading some of the companies available on the Sharesies platform and other investing experts.
Lunch Money is also available as a podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Please, if you're listening to the podcast, take a moment to leave a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate it. My name's Leighton. I'm one of the co-founders and co-CEOs of Sharesies.
And kia ora, I'm Brooke, also one of the co-founders and co-CEOs here at Sharesies. And before we get into today's discussion, I just need to give a quick, small legal disclaimer. Investing involves risk. You aren't guaranteed to make money and you might lose the money you start with. Any information we provide is general only and current at this time. If you're looking for some help with investment choices, we recommend talking to a licensed financial advice provider. We won't be providing any personalized advice as part of this webinar.
And also just a quick reminder that if you have any questions for us or our guests, you can submit them through the Ask a Question button down below. Don't leave questions in the discussion area as they are likely to get missed.
And please be kind and respectful towards our speakers and your fellow viewers. Otherwise, we'll have to take steps to remove you from the webinar. And we obviously really don't want to do that.
Definitely do not want to do that because today we are super stoked to be joined by Peter Beck, who is the founder and CEO of Rocket Lab. Peter's here today to chat about the year that has been for Rocket Lab and how it plans to navigate its way into the future. Welcome, Peter, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks very much, guys. Thanks very much. Real pleasure.
Oh, it's so great to have you here, and thanks heaps for joining us. It would be really cool to kick off with you telling us a bit about yourself and your career.
Yeah, so, I mean, the earliest memory I have of in fact it's almost the earliest memory I have is standing outside on a cold night in Invercargill with my father in the backyard and looking up at the stars, and he pointed out to me that all the stars that are in the sky were suns, and around those suns were planets, and there could be somebody looking back at me from one of those planets asking the same questions. So that was really the moment. It's like, wow, this space thing is, that's pretty big. And that was really the beginning. And really, I would say right throughout my career, it's always been about the rocket. And I would say I have a fairly non-traditional path. I think of most kind of, I think, CEOs and tech companies, one way or the other, end up with slightly unconventional paths, it seems. But for me, I knew exactly what I wanted to do at a very young age. And I loved engineering and I loved space. So you put those two things together, it's not surprising you end up with a rocket company. But my plan originally was to go and work for like a NASA or a Boeing or one of those guys. And everything I did during my career was kind of targeted at trying to enter the space industry. So when I finished high school, I had an option of either I go to university or I go and do a trade. And I went and did tool and die making, which is a precision trade, for the purpose of nobody could teach me how to build a rocket. So the only way to learn how to build a rocket is to build a rocket. So in order to build a rocket, you need really good machining and good hand skills. So I went and did a precision trade, and then the kind of opportunities kept presenting themselves, and ended up in the design office and so on and so forth, and ultimately ended up at a government research lab, industrial research, or Callaghan Innovation as it's now called. And then I went on a rocket pilgrimage. I thought, right, time to go to the US and let's see what we can do over there. So I went over on a bit of a rocket pilgrimage and went and visited all the places I'd been corresponding with for years and all the places I'd dreamed about. Did lots of tours of the NASA facilities. It was awesome. And really, it was both the most inspirational and depressing time all at the same time. It was inspirational to see all the history there. It was depressing to see the things that I thought needed to happen were not happening. So got back on the plane and doodled a logo and then landed, quit my job and started Rocket Lab. And then, we started building little sounding rockets to start with. So in 2009, we kind of became the first private company in the Southern Hemisphere to send something to space, not to orbit, just up into space. And then we kind of cut ourselves out as this little advanced technology shop, and did lots of little contracts for folks all around the planet, really, in space. And it kind of reached a point where I felt we had the credibility and the capability to go and raise real capital. And it's a funny thing because there's really two things I do, and one is Rocket Lab, the other is kind of helping New Zealand entrepreneurs. Because when I was on my journey, I suffered the same thing that a lot of New Zealand entrepreneurs did with really dilutive capital, and just put yourself into situations where it's impossible to raise from large institutional investors. So I jumped on a plane and went to Silicon Valley and gave myself 3 weeks to come home with a check or be run out of town. And everybody warned me going to Silicon Valley that it would be full of sharks and I'd come home and it would be terrible, but actually it was quite the opposite. And we only actually pitched to three investors in Silicon Valley, and they're the three biggest that I could find and the three that were aligned with what we wanted to do. And we did indeed come home with a term sheet after 3 weeks. And then, the rest is kind of history. Did lots of other rounds, well, relatively small number of rounds, like four rounds, and brought on larger and larger investors until ultimately we've reached this point here, which is the next part of our exciting journey. So I know that's a big long answer, but it's like I'm trying to compress 15 years into 5 minutes.
Yeah, you did well there. And I think you've got me thinking about how we're inspiring our children. need to be looking up the stars and seeing what the future could hold for them. Can you tell us a little bit more about Rocket Lab, like what your purpose is, what are the different business divisions, and dive into that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, Rocket Lab is an interesting company in the fact that we don't just build rockets. So I think we're most well known for the Electron launch vehicle, but that was always intended to be the first product in the start. In fact, the very second Electron that we ever flew, the kick stage on that Electron had flat recesses in it for the express purposes of later on putting solar panels in to make that a satellite. So really from very early on, we were thinking about building an end-to-end space company. And if you look at the space industry, the way to think about it is kind of three pillars of value. So you have launch, which is about a $10 billion total addressable market. Then you have satellites or space systems, it's about a $20 billion. And then you have applications. And now applications are all the things that we use from space. That's about a $320 billion. So you can see, if you can get yourself into that application space in a very, very competitive way, then that's a very great place to be. And whoever holds the key to space has a tremendous amount of ability to be very competitive in all those other areas. So as a company, yep, we do launch. We also build satellites. And ultimately, we'll be moving into applications where we actually provide services from space.
Yeah, we've had quite a few questions about the neutron rocket too. Can you tell us a bit about that and how it works? I think Jack specifically asked, will Rocket Lab launch Neutron from New Zealand in the future too?
Yeah, so Neutron is kind of the next evolution. Electron is an amazing product. It serves a really, really important market in dedicated small launch, and that will never, ever go away. Neutron really takes the next step into much larger payloads and even into human spaceflight. So really, I tell the team that like most people never get the chance to design a rocket from scratch once in their lifetime. We get the chance to do it twice. And we get the chance to take all the learnings of actually operating a launch vehicle and start, with a clean sheet of paper. And Neutron is really about providing an alternative solution in that medium to large space of launch. And with respect to the question, will it be launched out of New Zealand? To give you a sense of scale of the vehicle, like if you took all of the liquid oxygen in New Zealand, we half fill the tank. So there's some real challenges of launching a vehicle of that scale out of New Zealand. The industrial base is just not set up to support such a magnitude. So we'll start by launching that out of the US to begin with, and who knows in the future, but it's big. It's like really big.
Sounds like possibly a few different industry opportunities maybe in the future for New Zealand as well. But obviously, Peter, today I think probably most people listening, or many of them anyway, will be shareholders now, which is you know, really exciting, I think. And we certainly saw a lot of talk and had a lot of interest through the Sharesies platform for that. But we might just ask some questions that specifically like to know. So the first one is, who are your customers? And sort of to get two birds with one stone here, there's a little bit of interest around the military contracts and stuff, and potential investor view on that as well. So if you could just touch on customers and the military side specifically, that would be great.
Yep. So customers are basically 50-50 government and commercial. So, and of the 50% that are government, it's roughly 30% are defence related and 20% are government civil, like likes of NASA or NOAA and those kinds of customers. And we really like that customer mix because you know, it gives us a lot of diversity in our portfolio. Managing our manifest is very tricky because you know, most of the time, you know, we're waiting on a customer rather than a customer waiting on us. And when you're integrating a satellite or developing a satellite, and during going through all of its testing, quite often there'll be issues. And then, you know, we get the call, hey, look, we can't deliver a satellite on this day, so we have to, you know, reschedule and juggle the manifest. And having a good sense of, you know, good, healthy commercial customer base is super helpful for that, because the commercial customers tend to be a lot faster moving than the government customers. Mm-hmm. On the defence payloads, I mean, we've been super clear about this since from day one and super transparent. You can go onto our website and see every single defence-related payload that we've ever launched. I would say that New Zealand has the most, if not one of the most robust payload permitting processes. So it's the only country that I know, at least, that requires a minister to personally sign off on every single payload that goes to space. So every single payload that we launch is goes through the New Zealand Space Agency and all of their appropriate agencies, testing it for national interest and making sure that it meets all of New Zealand's obligations and all the rest of it. And then ultimately it's signed off by a minister. Now, as a company, we have our own view on this as well. You know, we don't fly weapons or anything, you know, contentious like that. But, you know, military payloads are woven into, you know, our everyday lives. You know, GPS is always the example that's very obvious. We all use GPS. If you want to order a pizza, your pizza turns up because it's been had GPS fed into it. And that's a, you know, that is a defense constellation owned, operated, and run by the US military. So, you know, within space, there is a lot of crossover between defense and commercial and infrastructure. But like I say, all of the rules and regulations about what we can and can't launch from the government's perspective are available on the government's website. And like I said, we've always been super, super upfront and transparent about all the payloads that we launch.
Yeah, cool. Great summary. Thank you. The next one is competitors, very high profile industry that you're in and only becoming more so. So maybe you could share a little bit of your view of where your competitors are and what differentiates you.
Yeah, I mean, so I would say there's a lot of emerging or potential competitors in this place, in this market. I mean, there's a bunch of companies, one even that's gone public from the launch side of it. I think, you know, the reality is that there's only been, like, the first private company to ever put a satellite into orbit was SpaceX. The second private company to ever put a satellite into orbit was Rocket Lab. So although there's a bunch of people trying, this is tough. This is a really, really tough thing to do. And I mean, even in the last, you know, few weeks, there's been two companies that have blown up rockets trying to get there. One company in particular, you know, it's six times in a row and still haven't got, you know, to orbit yet. So it is really, really hard. And getting your first rocket to orbit is hard. Getting your 10th or your 20th rocket to orbit is like hard squared. There needs to be like an exponential term on the hardness. It's very, very, very difficult. So we're not as naive to think that there aren't going to be competitors that come along, you know, in the future. You know, if you look at where we are and where everybody else is, you know, there is quite a large gap, and we continue to move out with new launch vehicles, reusability, satellite, and, you know, there's a long tail there. So, you know, as kind of pure competitors go, I would say that we're in a really unique spot right now. And, you know, from the spacecraft side as well, we have a fairly unique offering. And what we're trying to do here is build, you know, a truly end-to-end space company, perhaps one of the first. So, you know, we do see a lot of competitors trying to copy what we do. You know, other competitors are now trying to move into also building spacecraft, but, you know, you've got to get your rocket working before you can build your spacecraft. And other competitors are now talking about building big rockets too before they've built, haven't even built their little rocket. So, you know, there's a lot of the thing about this industry, and I guess the thing for investors to look at is this industry is tremendously exciting. There's a lot of people promise a lot of stuff, but what people should be looking for is execution. Like how many contracts are signed, how many payloads go to orbit, how many satellites work, those kinds of things. Because it is an industry, as you mentioned, is very high profile, very exciting. But you kind of have to filter through some of that to see actually who's delivering.
Yeah, great. I'm really interested in some of those points there. But like, you know, if you could just talk us through like the evolution of the business from, and I'm particularly interested if there's any moments where you're like, well, this is actually going to work because of the sheer risk that's involved and the challenge around that. Were you always confident? How did that play out?
Well, I mean, look, if you didn't think it was going to work, then you wouldn't. Then this is way too painful to not going into it thinking it's not going to work. There's massive evolutionary points in the company's history, that's for sure. Like raising money out of Silicon Valley, massive evolutionary point. Getting a vehicle on the pad and a successful launch, major evolutionary point that unlocked, you know, large investment rounds. Putting our first satellite on orbit, and you know that a big deal. Winning a NASA mission to the moon, like that's another big kind of milestone and evolutionary point in the company. And you know, look, I learned very publicly that never say something that you know, never say never to anything. That cost me a hat. So you know. Being very, you know, these days we certainly we take a much wider view on what is possible and what is not, because I've had to redefine what the art of the what I thought was possible several times. So now everything's possible.
And talking about everything being possible, you launched or you listed on the NASDAQ Rocket Lab RKLB, and that was just last month, right? So could you tell us a bit about why, you know, what is a SPAC and why you chose to go down that path to list, and why do you used to?
Yep. So at the highest level, why do we list? So, you know, we have never had any issues raising private capital. There's heaps of private capital out there and we could have remained private. The thing is that there's a couple of things that we're trying to do here is we're trying to build a large intergenerational space company. And that's hard to do as a private entity. Also, you know, we have a fairly active M&A pipeline. And having a public currency is super important for doing those larger M&A deals. We think that the space industry is ripe for a little bit of consolidation. So we want to make sure that we're in a great position to do some of that consolidation. And having that public currency is super important. Now, over a SPAC versus a traditional IPO, I mean, we were going down a traditional IPO path. We probably would have IPO'd in a traditional sense, maybe the end of this year or early next year, something like that. And pretty much all of the SPACs that came to our door, we just no thanks very much. We're on our own trajectory here. But there was one that really stood out amongst all the others. So we took a meeting and talked to the team there. And you know, it's always a good sign from my perspective when investors are asking lots and lots of questions and really hard questions because they're very engaged. And you know, at the end of I would say a couple of weeks of conversations, you know, their investment team were digging deep into orbital mechanics and trying to understand, you know, trajectories of kick stages. And it's like, right, these guys aren't here to just, you know, flick a dollar. These guys are here to also help us grow the business. And they bought over 40 professionals in M&A. So we have a large team at our disposal now to do some of that consolidation. And the nice thing about the SPAC was, I think people, you know, people might tell.
I think you've just frozen on us.
Yeah, if you can hear us, Peter, we've just lost you. So if you could just click refresh on your browser.
Maybe Layden, you want to talk a bit about what a SPAC is in the meantime.
Yeah, that's a a little bit of a pass there, Brooke. I wouldn't want to be putting anyone wrong. I know the theory of it, but I don't think I'm going to go and try to teach everyone in that right now. But it is becoming a much more popular way of raising capital, that's for sure. And it's a, I think, what's special purpose acquisition company. So it's effectively, there's quite a few on there on the exchange now. We don't have them in New Zealand, as far as I'm aware, not in Australia either. But they're basically large pools of capital. In this case, I think it was like $300 or $400 million in the US one. And when the company merges, sort of like an opportunity to raise capital. So it's like some sort of reverse process type happening. So those many probably held VACQ, which was the SPAC that was used for Rocket Lab. And they made an acquisition of Rocket Lab, and then Rocket Lab reverse listed onto the NASDAQ and picked up that capital as part of the process. And in addition, they raised some more. So that's basically what a SPAC is. I think the so this NMA question just came through. So he was talking about M&A, so that's merger and acquisitions. The company's looking for opportunities. He talked about consolidation of the space industry. There's obviously some companies out there doing some pretty exciting things in the space realm. And here he is. Hey, Peter, you're back and you're looking clear.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there. So.
In the meantime, I just quickly updated on what a SPAC was. So I covered that one for you. And I hopefully did it justice.
What was the process of listing like?
I mean, it was in some respects, it was awesome to be locked down in New Zealand, because, you know, it was impossible to travel to the US. So, in that respect, it was great. We did a whole roadshow in like 10 days, as opposed to going from, you know, business to business and firm to firm. So that was super exciting. But, you know, the downside, of course, is wasn't able to get up there to ring the bell.
Yeah. And what is, how has the, you know, has it changed much being, you know, a public company now? Does it feel different at Rocket Lab, or have you noticed differences in the change time?
A little bit. I mean, the reality is that we were already gearing up to become public. We were starting to really run the company like a public company. So some things have changed, but I would say in general, you know, the company was fairly well down the path of operating as a public company anyway.
Yeah, and you've got a team just over 600, and you've got a majority based here in Aotearoa, at least in the States. What's it like, what's the culture like at Rocket Lab, and how do you, manage that, obviously being here in Aotearoa and not being able to travel at the moment too?
Yeah, I mean, and that really comes down to, you know, what is the magic of Rocket Lab? How is it that SpaceX and Rocket Lab have really been able, the two companies that have been able to really blow through that and get, you know, successfully deliver a reliable service to orbit? And the answer to that is the team. Like, we have the best team in the world. And, the typical Rocket Labber is like incredibly passionate and incredibly smart and incredibly hardworking. And, you know, one of the greatest things, I think, is, you know, we gave out equity, from day one. So when obviously the company listed, there was a lot of tremendous number of the staff that were able to realize all of their hard work over all of these years. And I think, you know, like I said, I do a lot with startup companies, and one of the things I think that's really important here is yep, we can show a path that a New Zealand company can go and list on the NASDAQ and do all these things. But, you know, early on, we really struggled with trying to get people to see the value in equity, because, you know, in New Zealand, equity is not that highly valued. And I think mainly that's because in the US, if you go and talk to anybody, somebody knows somebody who's done really well out of equity in a startup company. In New Zealand, nobody knows anybody that's done really well out of a startup and using equity, actually equity. So very happy to see that and do a little bit to see that change, where people can actually go and work for a startup, realize you're not going to get paid a huge salary, take a risk on some equity, and if it pans out, it really pans out.
Yeah, we had we have similar conversations, and we're an investment firm, you know. So all of our everyone at Sharesies is a shareholder as well, and it is interesting that value thing. But I think what gets great, and I'm sure you don't have the problem selling that as part of the proposition anymore. I think it's the early days that are the hardest. But it is like what we really like now is it's designers or people who have come from an industry that's not the finance industry. Starting to see the benefits of that, and I think that's going to be great. I mean, obviously, I think the Xero stuff, there's a lot of people in Wellington who are aware of it because of that, but more success stories will definitely, I mean, it is a great way of sharing that wealth development with people. So just looking at the time, we might get on to some of the questions that have been asked from the people listening today. So we'll kick off with one from Barry. So there is a lot of competition in the small launch market space now, acknowledging that Rocket Lab is developing the Neutron. Are there any other ideas in the pipeline to make the Electron/Proton system stand out more against the competition? And he suggests perhaps a second stage that can grab some space junk on the way down.
So so I guess this is depending on what you want to call competition. We don't classify anything as competition unless they're actually delivering stuff to orbit. So until then, it's kind of emerging competition. So there is a lot of people in the small launch space that are trying, but for as long as I can remember, that has been the case. Like, we've tracked 140 small launch startups since 2015. There's still 140 something small launch startups, but as of yet there's only been one, which has been Virgin Orbit, that has made it to orbit other than Rocket Lab. So I don't want to sound as arrogant as thinking that nobody else will make it, but I think there's a massive difference between trying to get there, getting there, and then even a bigger difference between getting there and doing it reliably and regularly. So I think the Electron has really got a strong foothold in this market. You have to understand that it comes a point where heritage is everything. And, it takes a lot for a customer to move off a vehicle that has a lot of flight heritage onto something that's completely unproven. So, even as Rocket Lab, what you've seen from us recently is multiple back-to-back bulk buys of Electron. And that only happens because of the heritage of the vehicle, past 20 odd flights, and that's what enables that. So it is a long, painful road.
I can imagine, and that's awesome that Rocket Lab's been able to, pave that path too. I think that's really cool. Could you touch on your financial results? Because I know they just recently came out. Bit of the, highlights, challenges, just a bit of an overview there.
Yeah. So, the one of the things, that, I guess there's a few things we're proud of is the backlog has grown enormously. And, backlog to us is not kind of fluffy MOUs or kind of rubbish. It is like solid launch contracts, spacecraft contracts, signed deposits down and like real backlog. So, the backlog grew from, 60 to 140 million in the first half. And then even in the last quarter, we took it from 140 to 170 million in signed backlog and orders. So, so huge, huge growth there. The revenue growth year on year is over 200%. So, we're really, starting to hit our strides. What's exciting is also seeing the diversification of the space systems component of that. So, launches is great, but layering in that space systems is really important and for diversifying. Because launches, we're completely at the mercy of our customer delivering their spacecraft on time. So launch is always a lumpy business. We're constantly managing and moving the manifest and changing things, to allow for all of that. So the space systems revenue is just really nice to smooth all that out.
Yeah, cool. It's interesting, the valuation thing. I don't know how you've had those conversations, but the whole art and science feels like it's true for every startup, but probably none more so than something in such an emerging technology. How did you go about those conversations, or was it more sort of like just back engineered from what you think you might need? Or
It's a bit of both, But you know, it's looking at forward projected revenues, but also the nearest comp to us in the market is SpaceX at a $74 billion valuation. So when you look at Rocket Labs, whatever it is now, $7 or $8 billion, it really stands up well. You know, obviously SpaceX have gone are further ahead than us in many respects, but you know, with the bringing on of Neutron and a bunch of other projects, you know, the gap starts to close pretty quick. So, you know, if you look at on that metric, you know, we think it's good value. The reality is that, you know, as we've seen in the last few weeks, launch is hard. You know, there's a premium to actually get a launch vehicle and a successful launch company that works. So, you know, that's reflected in the valuation.
I've got a question from Rob here. Will Rocket Lab be aspiring to join the future efforts on the moon and Mars?
Well, yeah, I mean, so we already have two missions. So we have the Capstone mission to the moon, which is launching out of New Zealand, actually. That's a really important mission. So this is, we're putting a spacecraft in cislunar orbit for NASA. And this mission actually is to test out a very interesting orbit that will be the staging for Gateway. And Gateway is, you know, the safe return of humans to the moon and you know, onto Mars. So the spacecraft in this mission actually provides the critical data to be able to make decisions around the position of that Gateway project. So huge project that we're lucky to be involved in. We also have two missions that we run, one recently for NASA, once again for orbiting spacecraft around Mars. So these use our Photon platform. These are two spacecraft that are measuring the atmosphere or the ionosphere of Mars, launching in 2024. So we're already pushing out into the further parts of the solar system with the products.
Great. I've got another question, just moving away, slightly more personal question, Peter. This one's from Gordon. From George. But comments, you're obviously extremely successful. What would be your main tip for entrepreneurs or investors?
Well, for an entrepreneur, it's go after a big idea, because it's the same amount of pain for a small idea as a big idea. Same amount of lost sleep, same amount of stress. So you may as well just go after a really, really big idea, the biggest idea that you can. And then, you know, surround yourself with really great investors. I think one of the follies that I see New Zealand entrepreneurs making all the time is just taking money. And the least valuable thing an investor will ever give you is their money. So being really strategic in bringing the right investors on board with the right contacts and the right networks is you know, really, really important. So we can do a whole session on Pete's view of entrepreneurism, but those are absolutely the most important elements, I think, because it's, you know, those are fundamentals. And then from an investor, I would say you know, look for execution. You know, especially if it's in the space industry, look for execution. Within Rocket Lab, especially, you know, look for stuff we're doing in space systems and growth in space systems. I think you know, that has a lot of growth potential for us.
No, I'm definitely up for hearing your views on entrepreneurialism. I'm being an entrepreneur, and I like your idea about just chase the biggest idea, because it. It's a lot, you know, and incredibly rewarding and challenging creating a business. Talking about big ideas, like, what is the Jordan asked, what is the Rocket Lab's growth, you know, future growth look like in the next 5 to 10 years? What are you going to be really focusing on?
Yeah, so we're really focusing on a couple of things. One is the Space Systems Group. The other is obviously Neutron and the larger launch vehicle. And then more also that we haven't really, you know, laid out the roadmap too clearly yet publicly is our application. So, you know, ultimately owning infrastructure in orbit and providing services from orbit. Those are kind of the big growth areas. I mean, I think at the start I mentioned that, you know, the applications part of this market is, you know, order of magnitude larger than everything else. And if you have your own rocket, your own launch site, your own satellite components, everything you need to build that infrastructure, then it's a very competitive place to be.
You've made the comment a few times, and one of the people listening has commented on it, but it was, so Rocket Lab is now an end-to-end space company, which is diversified away from rockets only. So the question is, does end-to-end mean you concentrate on supporting payload and orbit management for Rocket Lab launches only, or are you supporting other space launch programs, so satellites for the delivery by SpaceX, NASA, or other nations?
Yeah, no, if you look at our manifest, we have a huge number of customers across all spectrums. End-to-end for us, we'll be building our own infrastructure, but we always envisage flying everybody else's stuff as well. I think the best example of that is if you look at our some of our satellite components businesses. So, you know, we recently just put in we're building a new production line, a large-scale production line for reaction wheels. So those reaction wheels, support our own internal products. They support a lot of other people's products. We weren't going to build a reaction wheel production line that's capable of 2,000 reaction wheels a year on a promise. So, you know, we have customers consuming large volumes of those. It's definitely part of our strategy here is to be providing, you know, components and solutions across the whole industry. I said to the team, look, I want everything that goes to space, whether it's a satellite that we built or we didn't build, whether it's a rocket that we launched or we didn't launch, it should have a Rocket Lab logo somewhere.
We've got a question here from Pirapi around, when you wrote your orbital debris mitigation plan, did you consider the special relationship Māori have with heavens, or did you consult Māori? I believe for Mahia Peninsula, it's Ngāti Rongomau Wahine.
We've had a super great relationship with all the local community down there, including the local iwis. With respect to orbital debris mitigation plans, it's a very specific regulatory thing that we have to submit. As an ethos as a company, we started off and we said, well, look, if we're going to launch a bunch of things to orbit, then we absolutely need to be responsible in the way we do that. And I think, you know, we're probably the largest or loudest industry voice around regulation of orbital debris. I went up to the UN in Geneva and spoke about this, and that's a story for another day. But, even from day one, you know, the way we designed Electron was never to leave any large parts of the launch vehicle behind. So, you know, the whole reason one of the reasons the kick stage is up there is to ensure that our second stage deorbits. And it's one of the things I worry about, because as we look at some of these emerging competitors, you know, some of them are talking about launching 300 times a year and all these crazy numbers, and not one of them have a good answer for how they're going to do that sustainably. Whereas for us, we designed that into the vehicle, like hard designed it into the vehicle from day one.
I was talking about Mahia Peninsula before, and Anthony said, would love to see a rocket launch in person. Are there any plans for a dedicated viewing area?
Yeah, well, we're hoping that somebody in the community or some entrepreneurial person will do that. For us, it's it would be another thing that we'd have to try and manage. Obviously, our priority is to get our customers into orbit. There are some great viewing spots though, and especially the dawn launches are just spectacular. The photography that we've seen from some supporters has just been phenomenal. You see that really, really cool, jellyfish, it's called, in the stage separation. So there are some good viewing spots, but there isn't a dedicated, like, close-up spot.
Definitely with them would be a pretty cool thing to see. We asked this question of every business at the moment, but it's come through from one of our listeners, how COVID's impacted, in particular, the latest lockdown, and when you expect that you'll be launching again.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about this in our last quarterly results and the guidance that we gave is, you know, we've revised down the number of launches that we expect to do this year simply because of this. I mean, we've been hit like everybody else. I mean, I'm in my house like everybody else in Auckland, COVID has been we're unable to launch in level four. We are able to launch in level three. So, we're working hard to manage the manifest and manage the rest of the year. So we, like everybody else, is very happy to see the reduction in levels. And, it has a big effect to our business, just like everybody else's.
I think we spurred on some interest or before your answer around sustainability. And we've got one from Wayne on what are Rocket Lab doing to ensure it meets social and environmental responsibilities?
Yeah, like I say, I mean, we've been very vocal on this from day one, and we actually designed the vehicle around this. So, you know, if you look at a, and this is kind of the industry's dirty little secret in some ways, if you look at all of the junk that's on orbit, a large portion of that junk is actually dead rockets, not dead satellites, spent upper stages and things like that. So we just didn't think that was we could, you know, stand on a podium and say that we were going to launch a lot and not have a solution. So, you know, the way we go to orbit is quite different to any of our emerging competitors, that is for sure. So we've always taken a very proactive view on that, a very public view on that, and, you know, even down to the missions that we fly. So, you know, we just announced yesterday another mission that we signed with Astroscale, which is actually a spacecraft that goes up there and it's going to rendezvous with an old spent stage of a European rocket. It's a, you know, testing program to see if can we rendezvous with this stage, and then ultimately I think they have plans to deorbit that. So you know, it is something that we're very vocal about within the industry. We're advocating for more regulation, which most people in the industry don't want more regulation. We think it's critical, you know, especially as more and more constellations are being built. Mm-hmm.
Great. Just looking at time, the questions are coming in faster than we can ask them, that's for sure. But we might as well, the highest voted one left, we'll make the last one. So it's, will you consider putting the laser Kiwi on the next rocket?
So, wow, you would be amazed the number of Kiwis that are on the rocket. Let's right. just say that. So we have some very patriotic designers. And you know, if you have a look at if you ever see inside a launch vehicle, there's a large number of laser cut aluminium components that, instead of a circular round hole to reduce weight, there's like a shape of a Kiwi, because, you know, and the analyst team signed it off. So there is more Kiwi emblems on it than you can imagine, and obviously, you know, the flag flies on a launch as well. So. So, yep, I think people would be surprised what's inside that vehicle.
Oh, cool. Well, kia ora, Peter. Thanks so much for joining us today. We really, really appreciate it. And thanks so much to everyone who tuned in. Yeah, we really appreciate your time and insight today, Peter.
No, my pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great. Please check out our new daily financial news podcast recap. It's around 10 minutes long and published at 5 p.m. Monday to Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
And next Thursday, we'll be joined by Michael Bennett. Michael is the CEO of Z Energy, who will talk about the company, how it's navigating the pandemic and its new Z electric venture.
You can register for that through the link in the chat below.
So we'll see you next Thursday. Enjoy the rest of your week and stay safe. Ka kite anō.
For more info, visit www.sheerzies.nz or find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Ka kite anō. Take care and happy investing.